This is David Duke. And this is David Duke, and this is the David Duke Internet Web Radio Broadcast, broadcasting live worldwide. Ladies and gentlemen, I have been doing over the last 3 days a spoken preface to Jewish supremacism, my book on the Jewish problem. I hope you've been enjoying it. I think that you have. I've been getting tremendous response from you. And today we're taking up some of the issues of Jewish influence in the American government and around the world, and how these extremists affect our foreign policy. More specifically, we were getting involved into the war against Iraq, and of course I pointed out that this is a war that is not for America, but a war for Israel. It's a war that in every way hurts true American interests, and a great betrayal of our fighting men, who should never be sent into conflict except when the direct well-being, safety, and security of America is at stake. Anything else is a betrayal. But as we've all learned, I have been right, and many other commentators have been right, in saying that Iraq never had any weapons of mass destruction. But even the rationale for the war was a lie from the beginning. And let me go into some of the basic principles that they used in promoting this war in the Jewish press. This is directly from my preface, and I'll show you how the media is able to twist and manipulate American sentiments for war. This is from my preface, and here are some of the comparisons that the press never gives in terms of promoting the war in Iraq. Why go to war against Iraq? One of the reasons promoted was, quote, Israel has weapons of mass destruction. Yet, Israel has one of the largest and most deadly arsenals of biological, chemical, and nuclear weapons in the world. Iraq tried to forestall UN inspectors. Yet, Israel has never even allowed any inspections of its huge stockpile of weapons of mass destruction. Israel has even blocked UN investigations of Israeli war crimes, such as Sharon's Sabra and Shatila massacre, and the mass murder at Jenin. Iraq had invaded and occupied its neighbor, Kuwait. Yet, Israel invaded and brutally occupied Lebanon for 18 years, killing over 20,000 civilians in the process, destroying 100,000 homes, and fomenting massive and murderous civil war between Christians and Muslims. Iraq had brutally occupied the Kurdish areas of Iraq. Yet, Israel has militarily occupied the 3 million people of the West Bank and Gaza for 35 years, a brutal occupation that has killed and maimed tens of thousands of Palestinians, forced many into squalid concentration or refugee camps, tortured hundreds of thousands in its prisons, and denied Palestinians of even the most elementary human rights. That Iraq was a danger to the United States. Yet, Iraq had never raised a finger against the United States, while Israel had a long record of terrorism and treachery against the United States, such as in the Levant affair, where they attacked United States installations in Egypt in a terrorist firebombing attack, and the Israeli Defense Minister Pinhas Lavan had to resign because of the fact the attacks were unsuccessful. Israel was treacherously going to attack, maim, kill Americans, blame it on Egypt, and lead America into a disastrous and unjust war against Egypt would have cost countless more American lives and countless billions of American dollars. They also attacked the USS Liberty, where even the Secretary of State at the time, Dean Rusk, and many other leaders of the American government at the time, including Admiral Thomas Moore, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, both these men and many others have stated clearly, then and since, that there's no question that Israel knew exactly what they were doing, that they were attacking deliberately an American ship in international waters in the Mediterranean, an attack that killed 34 Americans and grievously wounded 183. Another argument for the war was that Iraq had violated UN resolutions such as UN Resolution 1441. Yet Israel had violated more than three times as many United Nations resolutions as Iraq, including many resolutions supported by the United States. For 35 years, Israel has violated United Nations Resolution 242, demanding a complete Israeli withdrawal from the West Bank and Gaza, and even the United States demanded that Israel stop building settlements, and now Israel is basically confiscating millions of acres of Palestinian land. Now, if a case could be made for war against Iraq and for the offenses claimed by the Jewish neocons in the media, a far stronger case could be made for war against Israel. The war against Iraq was an immoral, hypocritical war, a war fought for Israel and against every vital interest of the United States of America. It was a war that simply could not have been possible without the Jewish supremacist domination of both government and media. In America, supremacist Jews have become so brazen in their power that they publicly punish and humiliate anyone who simply acknowledges that power. For simply mentioning the obvious role of the organized Jewish community behind the Iraq War, U.S. Congressman Jim Moran was actually forced to resign his Democratic leadership post. Associated Press on March 14, 2003 reports, quote, Representative Jim Moran, Democrat Virginia, was forced out of his party leadership post Friday after a furor over his remarks about the role of American Jews in a possible war with Iraq, unquote. It's fascinating to see Jewish supremacists exercise their power while at the same time they deny that such power exists. I see the value of all people preserving their cultural, national, and even genetic heritage. All peoples have the right to preserve their unique identities, including Jews. This book is about the fact that organized Jewish leadership pursues those goals of self-preservation and self-advancement tenaciously, while consistently disallowing other nationalities and races to act similarly in their own interests. Their ultimate victory would cause not only the loss of freedom, but also the destruction of the diverse heritage and culture of all peoples on the earth. It is my hope that all of us, all nations and every people, while acknowledging our respective differences of religion, race, culture, and nationality, we'll work together to defend ourselves from the one incredibly powerful supremacism that threatens us all. Much of the book is taken from my autobiography, My Awakening. This book is structured in the same fashion. It's an account of my personal journey awakening to the reality of Jewish supremacism, the ultimate supremacism. You will find its real power in the many direct quotations from important Jewish sources, all of which I carefully document with hundreds of source notes for your reference. Jewish supremacism is a thesis in an autobiographical form. It is the story of my awakening on the Jewish question that began when I was a young man, beginning in the late 1960s. Most of my fundamental understanding was in place by the end of that decade, but my knowledge has grown much deeper over the last 30 years. Since the 1960s, much new scientific and political material has become available. In recounting my awakening, I'm not trying to give the reader an impression that all the materials or studies I cite were available in the 1960s. I weave into this narrative contemporary data and documentation so the reader has the benefit of the latest information. Also, for reasons of coherence and organization, I focus on one primary area of discovery at a time, while in life the acquisition of knowledge is not so neatly compartmentalized. The reader will find some repetition in Jewish quotes that I find particularly revealing. They are repeated when especially pertinent to more than one topic. Also, I would be remiss not to add that when I write I learned or I discovered, that I take no credit for original research, for my education on these subjects came from innumerable authors in their books and articles. I'm in debt to them as well as to my many supporters and friends who have educated me with the insights and knowledge acquired in their own awakening. I assemble, organize, analyze, and comment on materials collected by scholars and writers from ancient times to the present. My preface finished, I must close my notebook and come down from Aspen Mountain. In doing so, I realize that I'm not leaving the natural world, for its laws continue in the world of human conflict below. The struggle for life and freedom exists among the different varieties of mankind as certainly as it does for every form of life and energy on this mountain. Taking part in the struggle for my people's life and freedom is as natural as the flow of the crystal stream running down the mountain beside me. It is my hope that the European people, the Palestinian people, and indeed all the peoples of the world are permitted the most basic human right of all, to live, to preserve their own unique cultures, freedom, and identity. To do so, they must resist the earth's ultimate supremacism, Jewish supremacism. I would be a fool not to realize the danger to my own life, reputation, and freedom that I face by exposing Jewish supremacism. But as a loyal European American, as a patriotic citizen of the United States, and also as one who sincerely wishes for justice for all people of the world, my duty is clear. So, coming down from Aspen Mountain, I see the stream next to me. It follows its course. So will I. David Duke, former member of the House of Representatives, State of Louisiana, United States of America. Well, that's it, ladies and gentlemen. That's the conclusion of part four of the preface to Jewish supremacism. I hope all of you will take a look and read the preface on www.davidduke.com and that you will look at the footnotes and satisfy yourself that they are indeed accurate. The book continues to make an incredible impact around the world, and it's going into more languages all the time. The Spanish edition is almost ready as I speak. We have a Hungarian edition going into effect in the next few days all over the world. This book is going out and educating more people. It's in many, many languages, and it's slated to go in many more. Also, a new authorized Arabic edition is coming online in the next few days. So, ladies and gentlemen, please help us promote this book. I don't think any book has more power to awaken the people of the world as to the threat of Jewish supremacism than this one. And I hope that you will enjoy these spoken sessions of my preface, and that you'll certainly spread them to your friends and family. We have a lot of work to do ahead of us. I appreciate all of you, and please remember that your support is what makes possible the work at davidduke.com. It makes possible the publication that I put out, the David Duke Report. You know, subscriptions and the like don't even really pay for themselves. And the money that I get in from the royalties, and in most cases the royalties are pretty low because that's the nature of the third world and many of the countries that publish the book, they go right into the cause. Your support makes possible getting this book out, the website out, this broadcast out, and the Duke Report out to the world. And I hope all of you will be generous in supporting our work. We've never needed your support more than at the present. Poor economic times in the United States for so many Americans have really dried up a lot of the spigots of contributions, and we have no well-heeled individuals ready to pour out tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of dollars as the ADL has and these other organizations have. So we need your support very much to continue our work. You can help us through contributions. You can help us through your gifts. You can help us even bequeathing support after you die in your will. Any way that you can help our work, I deeply appreciate, and really, our people deeply appreciate. Thanks so much, and I look forward to being with you again on Monday. Bye-bye now.
This has been a David Duke Worldwide Web Radio broadcast. For more information and to support our vital work, please visit www.daviddukes.com.